I'm going now.
What time are you gonna be home tonight?
I don't know, probably late.
Don't forget the cannoli.
Yeah.
Cannoli? Clemenza, dude. I thought we were going for spring rolls. Don knows all the good Vietnamese spots. Hey, Polly, why are you looking at me like that?
Sit on the other side. You block the rear view mirror.
Okay, I'll move. But that ain't my head that's blocking your view. You get it? So, okay, spring rolls, right? I want to do this episode of Out to Lunch in an authentic Vietnamese place. And Westminster's full of these places. My buddy Don here knows all the good spots.
You know any good spots on the west side?
West side of what? We're on the west side, left coast, California, baby. We've got all the good food here. Why are you looking at Paulie? He doesn't know. I'm the host here. This is my show, Clemenza.
Yeah, I think about it.
Well, think about it while you're driving, will you? I want to hit New York sometime this month.
New York? What the fuck?
Watch out for the kids when you're backing out.
Hey, am I in the right movie? Apocalypse Now, Vietnam? Oh, the other Coppola movie. Oh, dude, I totally screwed this whole thing up. All right, my bad. My bad. Look, just take us to the airport. We'll be out of your hair. Damn, you believe I did that?
Hey, pull over, will you? I gotta take a leak.
Dude, I can't believe I did that. Of all the muck-ups. I mean, look, a mobster version of Out to Lunch, it wouldn't be the end of the world. But I was looking forward to featuring spring rolls. And look, granted, Apocalypse Now doesn't really make me hungry. What with the shrunken heads and the napalm and all that shit. But seriously, Don, what are you doing? What's with the gun? Don, put that down. Don't point that at him. Dude, what the fuck? Why'd you shoot Polly? Now who's gonna take us to the airport? Big dummy. Don, what are you doing?
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
I told you, spring rolls, motherfucker. This movie sucks. Hey, what's happening? Love The Godfather. I'm winding down to show 100 here, and I wanted to do something special before we basically did nothing but a giant recap on the next show. And it only seemed appropriate that I devote a show to a chef I admire, who I can call a friend, and who has been getting a lot of attention lately, and rightly so, Ludo Lefebvre. He's got a new book coming out on Tuesday, Ludo Bites. It's a collection of stories of each of his pop-ups, including recipes from some of his more popular dishes from each pop-up. And it's a nice recap, I think, of something that started this phenomenon of chefs waltzing into restaurants that normally are not open for dinner service, bringing in their own staff with their own menu, and serving up a special dinner menu. Now, we missed Ludo's first pop-up. We didn't know who he was. And the second, the third, and the fourth, we were able to get to those. But by the time the fifth pop-up came around, and I think I might have started even earlier than that, the popularity got crazy. But by the time the fifth came around, the word was definitely out, and getting a reservation started to become notoriously hard for everybody. Even Kevin, from Kevin Eats, who prides himself on being the first to review any big restaurant in Los Angeles, could not get a seat for number 7. And that made me happy. Not because I think Kevin's a prick or anything like that, but because after a while I started to feel jilted, like somehow it was personal. And it wasn't personal. It's the system. It's the luck of the draw. And I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're friends with somebody or not. Fair is fair. And you're either in luck or you're screwed by luck. You know, the thing with us was knowing people who did get tickets got us into a couple of these, including the last one. So Joe and Peter, Dave and Lisa, we couldn't have gone without them, so we thank them very much. So today, I'm going to be talking about Ludo's book, which you can order right from our website at mylifeasafoodie.com. I'll be sharing a recipe from the book, one of our all-time favorites, Katrina's especially. And not too hard to make this one. And get this, My Life as a Foodie is listed in the blog list at the back of the book, which I found very, very cool. You're talking about somebody who's given back to the people who helped them, and I'm not sure how much help I was, but there were a lot of bloggers that were very influential, Joe especially, because you know how she is. She'll turn just a normal chef into a rock star, or someone who deserves to be a rock star who isn't. She'll make sure that happens. And she's been really kind of beneficial here in L.A. And I don't think there's been a blogger who has done more for chefs than she has. And it's cool to get her to see her get some recognition in the front of the book. Now, I don't have a beer to review on today's show, but I did want to talk about a few things that I've tried since I did the last show. And I think it's been a year since I did a show, isn't it? Something like that. I had Stone's 16th Anniversary Ale, which many people had horrible things to say about the beer. Dreadful. It was overwhelmed with lemon verbena. Look, you know what you do? Don't tell someone there's lemon in something, because then they're going to freak out and say, oh, all I taste is lemon. Bullshit. I hardly tasted lemon, and I know what lemon verbena tastes like. They just had really nasty things to say, and you know, Greg found himself defending them on these beers. They said Stone had gotten out of hand with the experiments, and I just found it all to be bullshit. I liked the beer a lot. Did I rank it among my favorites? No, but it was drinkable. I had it several times, enjoyed it each time. It's still on shelves. I could still get it now if I want it. They also released another one called Enjoy by 92112 IPA, which I thought was fantastic. I had that beer three times, a couple times with Don, enjoyed it all three times, and I thought, I should save one. But by the time I thought to get one to the cellar, it was off the shelves. Now you can't find it. But one thing is, in this long break I've taken here, I've really come to appreciate wit beers. In fact, I've come to appreciate them so much, it might be my new favorite style. It's light, sweet, lots of flavor. And when the carbonation is a little bit over the top, it ranks into sparkling wine territory as far as mouthfeel goes. And I'm a sucker for sparkling wine. As it got hotter this past month, I've tried a lot of wit beers. Several that I've had before, some I have not. Hoegaarden, tried that one again. Whitakirk is maybe my all-time favorite. I love that beer. Long layoff since I've had a lot of this stuff. Avery's White Rascal, which I had on Bob's show last Halloween, another great one. I tried Red Hook's wit that they make with ginger. Not bad. Pyramid, Goose Island, a few from Belgian breweries I can't pronounce. I couldn't pronounce them if I was sober and French, but they were good. I really like them all, and I know what you say. You know, wheat beers are for pussies. Well, whatever. You know, I know what I like, and I'm not afraid to admit that I like these. So earlier this week, Ludo appeared at Quicksilver, a surfwear shop for women here in Fashion Island in Newport Beach. Quicksilver is a surfwear company, but from the Midwest to the East Coast, a lot of people think that Californians, that we all surf, that we spend the day at the beach smoking pot and just hanging out at the beach. Well, a lot of people do that, and a lot of us love the beach, and there are a lot of people, especially here in Orange County, who make surfing a lifestyle, and it is a lifestyle. Don surfs, okay? I didn't know that about him until recently, or like a year or two ago. He's a big surfer. He's got a nice board and everything. I love the ocean. I don't surf. I do some boogie boarding, some body boarding. I dive. I love being in the water. But surfing is not something I've ever been able to do, so I just kind of gave up. But I love the ocean. It's one of the reasons that I will never leave the coast. I may move up and down this coast in my lifetime, but I will not leave it. Beach culture is just something that is ingrained in us, and there's nothing like it, really. So, and it was a really funny thing, too. When I would talk about wearing sandals, I think it was Sick Puppy from Soda Drink that said, well, that's gay. Gay? We're at the beach. We live, you know, not far from the beach. It's the culture here. Flip-flops and shorts in the summer. That's what we do. You know, that's the lifestyle here. I just thought it was kind of funny. Now, people just don't understand. And I'm not going to try to explain it. So I wondered what the connection was with Ludo to Quicksilver, because several months ago, Ludo and Chrissy did a pop-up at the Big Island in Hawaii, and Ludo met this surfer and the spearfisherman Mark Healy and some friends of his, Stephanie Gilmore, who's a five-time world champion surfer from Australia, and another surfer, Reef McIntosh. I'm sure his name is Reef. His parents named him Reef. anyway, he's known for speeding through pipelines. And pipelines are surf breaks that roll above coral reefs, and there's a lot of those in Hawaii. And what happens is they cause a wave to break, which forms this giant barrel that you can surf through at high speed. Now, that is dangerous shit if you crash, but these guys don't crash because they're pros. Anyway, he joined them to catch some fish, some local fish, and then go back to shore and cook it all. It's a fun short film to watch, especially when you start to see how imaginative Ludo can get when he's got really fresh ingredients to use. They catch and cook opihi, kona crab, spiny lobster, and uku, which are all native to the area. Now, Ludo sourced some local ingredients. He made them a meal. I don't think these guys are ever going to forget a meal like this. He's cooking right on the beach. So Chrissy had emailed me, wanted us to be there since we were close. Don and I ride our bikes to Newport Beach all the time. It's not that far. So we went, we had some of Ludo's food that he was preparing. And, you know, it was, you got to know, this was just over the charts delicious. I posted some pictures on the website from some of the dishes that we had there, including a Dorado ceviche in a rich lime marinade with pickled and fresh vegetables, a vegetarian salad with smoked couscous, which is just to die for, basil, melon, garbanzo beans, and yogurt. I was talking to Ludo, and I said, hey, what was the smokiness in that dish? He goes, oh, I smoked the couscous. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, man, it was in everything. He goes, yeah, Americans like to smoke. I go, yeah, they like to smoke everything. He starts laughing. There was a one-bite lobster amuse-bouche buried in a thick, rich sauce. I have no idea what was in that. But there was this lovely bowl of squid carbonara with bacon and the yolk of a quail egg in a rich bechamel-style sauce. Typical Ludo food. But what hit me over the head was probably the least assuming dish that he served. It was a mini taco made with a corn tortilla that he filled with brandad, which is an emulsion of salt cod, olive oil, and Yukon Gold potatoes. And he topped that with a small salad of arugula. You like arugula? It's peppery. It's really peppery. I love it. I don't think it's one of Katrina's favorite things, but when I get a chance to eat it, I'm all over it. Now, I don't think I could eat an entire salad with just arugula, but I like to mix it in with other greens. That's the bomb, man. I love it. So the food's been served, and they want to show Ludo's short film, Chef and the Sea. Now, I've taken the liberty to embed this film on the website at mylifeasafoodie.com, so you can watch it there. But for those of you who are in your car, in the gym, on your way to the subway, or just maybe you're bored at work, here's some audio from the film.
Today I'm in the Big Island. I'm here for doing a pop-up restaurant. I have a restaurant tour who travel around America. For a chef, it's good for me to be here and just experience a different lifestyle and to go in the water and to learn how the fish live, what's going on in the sea, what can I get from the sea, what can I do with that. I'm really looking forward to spend time with some world champion surfer. You know, they're going to take me out, see the way they live, because cooking is all about inspiration. I don't get inspiration just to be in my kitchen in Los Angeles.
My name is Mark Healy. I'm from Oahu, Hawaii, and my profession is big wave surfing.
And Mark Healy, you know what I hear about him? I mean, crazy guys. I don't get me wrong, they're good crazy guys, but the guy is nuts a little, huh?
Reef McIntosh is a great friend of mine that I actually lived with for a couple of years at the Quicksilver House. Reef's probably one of the most natural surfers at Pipeline. Just cruises, he's so calm, cool, and collective, and heavy waves.
And I hear he's a good cook too, so you know, I hope he's going to teach me some secret.
Steph Gilmore is one of the most progressive female surfers in the world right now.
My name is Stephanie Gilmore. I'm 24 years old. I am a professional surfer, and I'm from the Gold Coast in Australia.
Aussie girls, man. Aussie girls are rugged. They can hang with the boys.
My grandfather was a French chef, and food is definitely on the list of things that I love to learn about.
Ludo is he's a really cool guy, and I was excited to see how enthusiastic he was about surfing and kind of taking inspiration from what surrounds him and the activities he does.
So today what we're going to do, we are going trolling, you know, try to find some fish.
Ready to go battle the wind, try to catch some fish?
The ocean, I mean, I don't know much about that. And I hope we need to get some good idea, good fish to cook.
Chef Ludo, he's actually coming out of his comfort zone and trying something new.
It was cool to see, it's very genuine.
Pull this in, this is a big one.
Wow.
This is a nice crab. Delicious. You pull them right up.
Right, yeah, come here, sir. Let me see a crab like this. What's the name of this crab?
It's called a corner crab.
We went for a little sightseeing tour down the coast. Steph got to go do a rock jump, and then I went and collected opihi off the rocks while they were doing that. And yeah, that was a lot of fun.
I never experienced the real life with surfers. A lot of people don't know them, you know, how they live every day. You know, they play, you know, but hard.
The boat was really rocky, actually, and everyone was starting to feel it towards the end there, but Chef was kind of like, okay, this is a good fishing experience, but maybe not for me. I'll just stick to the kitchen.
Plan B, we put Mark in the water. Plus two, you know, spear fishing. I mean, that's scary. I mean, it's not spear fishing where you have, you know, 2 or 3 feet of water. No, we are going deep, you know, 50 feet of water. It's crazy.
Surfing and spear fishing were equal parts for me growing up. The feeling of being underwater is one of the most relaxing feelings that I can have. It evens me out. You know, I have the surfing side, which is like active and a lot of adrenaline, and free diving really is what kind of balances it out for me.
It's crazy. The guys are very intense.
Whenever I come to the Big Island to catch fish, it's like a 24-hour a day thing. You're just going, going, going until basically the wheels fall off and you got a lot of good food.
So we got a Hawaiian spiny lobster here and a 7-Eleven crab here.
In the mainland, it's all about farm to table. Here it's ocean to table.
It's just amazing. He dives down and gets dinner.
I mean, that's an art, but, you know, seriously.
How's our fire looking?
Reef set up a little fire.
We've already collected some kiawe wood.
Kiawe wood? Kind of like a hickory, like cowboys would use, but it's like the Hawaiian version, so it's got a lot of flavor, and it burns slow and long. Well, thanks to Mark. Got some delicious local fish.
Can't get any more fresh than that.
So you got chili, pepper, water. Uh-huh. So you just infuse the water with
chili. You don't mind spice.
Ready? Ready.
Oh, it's amazing. It tastes like you caught it like 5 minutes ago.
It's kicking down your throat.
Yeah.
I like to eat with my finger. But I think it's very important when you eat to feel the texture too of the with your hand.
Like feel it, taste
yeah,
it.
Yeah, just another sense of
exactly.
Eating, right?
No, I think it's pretty cool to take it like this, you know.
I love eating fish off the grill like that, to where it's cooking and you start eating it and it's still raw in the middle, so you get down to where it starts getting raw and then you flip it and let it cook. So you're always getting the fish just cooked right.
So what's the name of this fish again, Mark?
Omilu.
Omilu?
How long did it take you to catch this guy? Yeah. Including the first glance, the look of love at the fish.
I was down for like a minute. And I was watching the fish in the distance that I wanted to see, and there's that guy with another one, same size, that just went right over my back, over my head. And I just pulled my gun and, like, rolled over on the bottom on my back, shot up at it. And it just went nuts and got tangled. But to me, this fish tastes better than 70% of fish that I eat in restaurants. And it's so simple. But then the other 30%, to make it really good, that's worth it. That's what we want to see from you.
Catch me some more, Mark. Bring me some to the restaurant. They're fishing the fish the morning and the night is in your plate. I think it's pretty amazing. That's really quality of life. But
I was really looking forward to seeing Ludo's take on all these different ingredients. To have somebody come in that didn't really have any idea or preconceived notions about those ingredients and see their spin on it, I was really excited.
Never cooked that. I never cooked that before. And this one too.
I kind of threw him some monkey wrenches, like the opihi. That's a pretty different ingredient.
So you see it's tough, a little, it's tough, huh?
Yeah, it's definitely a bit chewy. That was kind of how I was testing him. See how he'd go with that.
So we're gonna do like a little escargot style. We're gonna cook them very, very slow. A little touch of garlic. So it's escargot butter.
The Hawaiian escargot.
Yeah.
Breadcrumbs.
It was cool to see just how much passion he put into preparing it and really wanting to do it justice.
That's delicious.
It was the best opihi I've ever had.
Wow, that's that color.
Are you going to show me how to clean it?
Yeah. Okay, there.
Uh-huh.
And then...
Oh, nice. Wow.
These were built to be eaten.
Yeah, yeah, except for me with the juice here. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's all the flavor here, right there. So smell that.
That's just like crab juice?
Yeah, just, yeah.
It smells like crab.
It's pretty good. Kimchi sauce. So that is an inspiration, because yesterday on the boat, I was sick and the guys opened the kimchi thing. Oh my God. The kimchi,
crab. The kimchi is still like, it's not overpowering for that delicate crab taste.
It still tastes of crab, yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's amazing,
that's
huh?
So good.
I'm going to put that on the menu. So the fish you catch, we're going to cook it exactly like the way we cook in France. In cross of salt. We're going to bake it.
I've never had it that way. So is there just like a lot of salt in that dough?
Yeah,
flour
and salt.
These are all things that are very close to my heart. It's things that I've been eating since I was a little kid. It's kind of comfort food.
Okay, our fish is ready.
That looks amazing.
Yeah. So I'm gonna open that like this, guys. Hoping it's cooked. So it's like bake and steam, you know? So like this, the fish stay very moist.
And you're really gonna taste the flavor of the actual fish itself, because there's not a lot of stuff drowning it out. Huh? But right when you open that, I could really smell the fish. Like it's a distinctly seafood.
Chef Marc.
Thank you.
Your fish.
Merci.
That's your fish, bro.
Oh, if only this fish knew how good it tasted.
So I'm going to do a French technique, how we cook the lobster.
Oh!
We're going to do a hole in the head here.
You might need Mark's spear gun to just... Chef's mallet.
It's like killing a vampire.
Here we go. Yeah. Just for you, Mark, I'm going to use the Hawaiian salt.
He made that little chimney out of the lobster head and started putting the butter in there. It really dispersed the flavor of that garlic butter all through the meat.
It's really to incorporate the butter in the lobster.
Chef Ludo was using all the local produce and just creating some delicious things.
I get this local pineapple, man, by some local. Look, it's beautiful. This honey is so good.
Is that from here?
Yeah, it's so good, man.
You're just making me hungry.
We're going to caramelize the pineapple.
So that was just honey and...
Honey, that's it.
How do you tell when it's cooked? You don't tell when it's
how
cooked.
You tell, you know, how you tell? How do you know it's a good way?
Here comes the messy part. Everything he made really worked well with the flavor of the main ingredient. And he hadn't even tasted the main ingredients before. He kind of read and just off of how I described them, found a good way to prepare it.
Lobster and pineapple together, okay? Sweet and savory. Everything was from the island. The honey, the pineapple, the lobster. I think, chef, now restaurant, we need to be responsible about where we bring our staff, you know, and not using too much thing from far away or whatever. You know, it's really to cook with what we find around us.
And it's probably interesting to you because it's more challenging as
well. Yeah, definitely, yeah.
It's like the difference between paddling big waves and towing big waves. Anybody can tow in. Anybody can order ingredients from far away places, but to do it right in the place you're at, a lot more difficult, I'm sure.
When he prepared these dishes and served them to us, he's like, remember, I saw you eating kimchi on the boat, so made this kimchi crab. He incorporated everything that happened during the whole journey to get the ingredients. So not only was it things that really worked with the flavor of the main ingredients, it kind of like told the story of our trip as well. That's how you know like the difference between a normal chef and a chef of his caliber.
When I go surfing, I'm so exhausted all the time. I paddle like 20 times and I'm not in shape.
It's a little more than fishing. Fishing, you just kind of sit there.
My job is about cooking. You know, it's really to spend time with people and learn. Learn and learn from people and get some ideas.
It's pretty good exercise too.
Yeah.
But you know what they say, never trust a skinny chef. So you can't get too fit.
It was really fun to have Steph, Reef, and Chef Ludo over here because I got to kind of bring them along for the ride. It was really cool to be able to share that with them.
There was definitely a common thread between all of us. It's a similar thing. It's just that passion for surfing and and the ocean and seeing the different avenues that you can go down and continue that lifestyle back onto the land.
I would love to be a surfer, you know, so definitely. I think it's cool. I have so much respect for these guys and I learned from them their philosophy of life, eating, you know, to be in contact with all these things, nature, people, ingredients, you know. So guys need to see what they do, these guys. It's pretty amazing.
There have been a lot of times I've just really wanted to just sit down and interview Ludo for the show. But it seems that every time I see him, it's either in a noisy place where an interview would be ridiculously difficult to hear, especially this place, which had really live, loud music in a very small place, or he's incredibly busy, or we're hanging out, it's a personal thing, you know? And I never want to mix business with pleasure. So I don't want to cross that line, so I just didn't do it. Maybe one day, I want to ask one question, and I've always wanted to hear an answer to this question. And I think I know the answer to it, but I want to know why he doesn't just cook French food. Why is it that, you know, he's from France, trained to do this stuff, but he doesn't cook French food. He does some things that are French with other things, but he doesn't cook French. And I'd like to, like I said, I think I know the answer, but I want to hear it from him. I know the guy's an artist, that he likes to merge cuisines. And the word fusion is overused, but it comes close. He plays with ingredients, mixes those from one cuisine to another cuisine. Now, take the brandade in the tortilla, for example. Brandade is traditionally a French and Spanish dish that you smear on bread. But in a corn tortilla with peppery greens, somehow it starts to become more like a fish taco. Now, if you add a couple sprigs of cilantro, you'd think it was a Mexican dish. So, you know, Ludo's an artist in every sense of the word, and I can see, you can like watch him think about his next step in almost every frame of this film. So the movie's over, and the owner of the Quicksilver shop asks Ludo to get up there, say a few words about the film and his relationship with Quicksilver. I recorded that, and here it is.
I mean, look, I'm very proud to be of the part of the family of Quicksilver. It was amazing experience for me to spend time like 3 days with this athlete. I learned so much about life, lifestyle, and as I always say, chef, we need inspiration. And just to be with them, I learned so much about life and the way they live. So, thank you to Quicksilver. But the thing is, these guys, they're crazy. I mean, they're insane. I mean, good crazy, don't get me wrong, but, you know, just... Mark goes in the water, in deep water, with sharks everywhere, and just we're dropping like this for like 2 hours, and we come back to pick up him in 2 hours later, and he gets some fish. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, the guy is nuts. He's nuts. I mean, a good nut guy, you know, he's very passionate, but, you know, he's nuts, you know? But he gets some fish. Steph, it's amazing. I mean, she's so sweet, so nice. Amazing athlete. And with all her success, she's just so sweet. I wish she can teach me how to surf better. I want to spend more time with her. Huh? Yes, but in Hawaii, when I was with her, it was not a big wave. So it was okay for me, but not for her. So, you know, but Steph... Huh? I wish I can see her soon. Chrissy, you're my wife. You're here. Hello, yeah. I mean, for surfing, Chrissy, okay? But, you know, I mean, like I say, you know, I mean, to just be part of the family of Quicksilver and to spend time with them, it was just amazing. I mean, cooking is all about that, you know, to learn about people, sharing things and cook together. And it was just a joy for me to just create recipe for them. I was so excited to cook for them. I spent time with them on the boat. I was sick with them in the boat for 1 day, you know. And but the end of the day, you know, I was so happy to cook for them. They kicked my ass on the boat, surfing, swimming, whatever. So after, I was very happy to go back in the kitchen and tell them what to do, to peel vegetable or this thing. But, you know, it's I think the connection between athlete and chef, it's a very strong connection. I love their lifestyle. It's pretty cool. And cooking, you know, is not just to cook in the kitchen. I mean, that day we cooked two on the beach. After we cook in the kitchen, but I wish we can do more things together and cook to, I don't know, in the forest or whatever. But cooking is not just to have a silverware and cook in the kitchen, the funny place in the, on the table. And these guys, that just, we don't give a shit or anything, you know, just, sorry my English, but no, but they're just, I mean, they're amazing. I mean, I wish I can be a surfer, seriously. It's my dream, but I'm not very good. So I need to keep with cooking. I have no choice. Yeah, thank you guys. But you know, no, but you know, it's just, I mean, Quicksilver always be a great inspiration for me. I mean, ask my wife. When I see a store of Quicksilver, I always go shopping over there. You know, I mean, I always want to be a surfer, but I'm not very good. Yeah, Mark wants to be a chef, you're right too. I wish I can go spend time with them, you know, one day, like some time in Hawaii with them. But you know, I hope to do another movies with them, definitely. Thank you. I finished with you. Okay. I'm finished.
Oh. So one of the dishes that Luda cooked in the film was Kona crab, cabbage, and kimchi butter mini tacos, which I thought looked like the best dish to make. I have the recipe, and I'm going to share it with you, and I'll post this one on the website. So if you want to make this, you can go to the website and get it, mylifeasafoodie.com. And listen, unless you're in Kona, you're not going to get Kona crab. So use whatever crab you want for this dish. Dungeness, blue crab. If you can't get whole live crab, buy some king crab legs. Just get some crab meat. The fresher, the better, okay? This serves four. You can have six mini tacos apiece. And basically, the recipe is this. You need two whole Kona crab. Now, Kona crabs are pretty medium-sized. So if you can't get those, like I said, a couple Dungeness crab or maybe six or seven little blue crabs, just get some crab or get some crab meat. You make a kimchi sauce, you'll need one gelatin sheet. Now, if you can't find gelatin sheets, and I use those for my molecular gastronomy stuff, usually you can find those in baking stores or baking supply houses. So if you can't get gelatin sheets, you can use powdered gelatin. Half a teaspoon would be the equivalent of one gelatin sheet. A half cup of water, 3 ounces of unsalted butter that you've diced, 1.5 tablespoons of rice vinegar, 2 teaspoons of three crab fish sauce. If you can't find that, you can just use regular Vietnamese fish sauce. Stinky stuff. Really good, though. 2 teaspoons of finely grated peeled fresh daikon. 2 teaspoons of finely grated peeled fresh ginger. 2 teaspoons of sambal, which is a garlic pepper sauce you can find in the Asian aisle of your supermarket. 1/2 teaspoon of finely grated garlic. And 1/2 teaspoon of honey. Now, for the cabbage, he used one big head of cabbage, and either green cabbage and one head of red cabbage. And just take the leaves off so you can cut out discs. 2 teaspoons of olive oil and kosher salt. To prepare the cabbage, you want to use a 3 to 4 inch round cutter. And if you've got these ring molds that you use to plate food with, any kind of a round cutter, 3 to 4 inches, and start cutting out discs of green cabbage leaves and red cabbage leaves. You'll need about 24 total. Cook the green cabbage discs in a large saucepan of boiling lightly salted water for about 30 seconds. And then remove the discs from the boiling water. Put them in a bowl of ice water to cool. You want to stop the cooking, but you want to keep the color, okay? Remove the cabbage discs from the ice water, pat them dry with paper towels, and then repeat this process for the red cabbage discs. If you're only using green, that's cool. Just go ahead and do 24 of those. Now, to make the kimchi sauce, place the gelatin in a bowl of ice water, set it aside until the gelatin softens about 5 minutes. If you're using the powder, you can find that in the baking aisle of a grocery store, 1/2 teaspoon. Put that to the side. Don't do anything yet with that, okay? In the meantime, take 1/2 cup of water, bring it to a boil in a small saucepan over high heat. Add the butter and blend that with an immersion blender. You want to go a couple pulses when you do this just to make sure you're not going to splash it out. In fact, what I did, use a taller pot. I've got one of these soup pots. That's the same size as a regular saucepan, but it's taller. So I can get the blender in there, pop it a few times, and the water has to go up a little higher to get out so it won't make it. So you don't splash it all over yourself. And just be careful. After it's all been blended and foamy, add the vinegar, the daikon, the sambal, the ginger, fish sauce, garlic, and honey, and then blend it well again with the immersion blender. Remove the gelatin from the ice water, stir it into the butter mixture until it's dissolved, and keep that sauce warm, okay? If you're not using the blooming sheet, add 1/2 teaspoon, mix it in really, really well, and then keep it warm. In a big saucepan, add some water, bring it to a boil, throw your crabs in there, cook those crabs for about 12 minutes. If you're using pre-cooked crab, Just make sure you get it hot so you can crack it later and take the meat out. Meanwhile, steam some cabbage discs in a Japanese bamboo steamer. If you've got one of these, they're great. I've used them for years. I did shrimp shumai early on in my life as a foodie. I think it might have been episode 8 or something. You basically take like a giant wok full of water, get it over high heat to boil it, and then you put the steamer, the bamboo steamer over it, and then you lay the cabbage discs inside and just kind of warm them up and get them hot. Remove the cabbage discs from the steamer, toss them in a small bowl with a little bit of olive oil, season them with salt so they've got some flavor. Place the cooked crab in a bowl in ice water, cool it down, crack open the crab, clean out the meat, crack the legs, get that meat outside, get all that meat set aside. To plate them, you lay the cabbage on a plate, place some crab meat on each piece of cabbage, spoon the kimchi sauce over the crab, and eat with your hands. It's like a mini taco, and it's absolutely fantastic.
I do want to call out a couple things. I was on Wikipedia this morning trying to find out little interesting tidbits about this man, and let's just say he's not lacking of accolades, but a couple of my favorite were Time Magazine named him Chef of the Future.
I am the Chef of the Future. I heard your wish, and I have come here to answer it.
He has earned, by my count, which was just me doing research, so correct me if I'm wrong, but 3 Mobile 5-star awards. Is that correct? He's been named the most influential French in America, and his restaurant is top of the list in toughest U.S. restaurants to get a reservation. So, needless to say, this guy's pretty good.
So No Reservations is in its last season on Travel Channel, and they're calling this the final tour. The show is going to continue, more than likely under a new name, on CNN next year. I don't know much about this. I don't know how many more shows he has left or how he's going to finish, but I can tell you with great certainty that the Burgundy episode, which aired last week, is, to me anyway, his single best episode ever. I feel this way probably because it features Ludo, who I'm familiar with, but I sense it's because it showed the true essence of France, the French countryside in the region of Burgundy, where Ludo was born, and where one of my favorite dishes of all time comes from, that dish being beef bourguignon. And I'll tell you, there's so many times that Bourdain has featured countries, and of the two that always just grip me, and I watch them over and over again, Vietnam and France. How many times he's been to Vietnam, how many different times he's been to France, every time I'm drilled. Japan, too, is another one. So if there was a country that I was going to go to and make it number one on my list, it's going to be France for a number of reasons, but for all the reasons that they show in the Burgundy episode. You know, it's tons of great charcuterie and sausages and cheese and wine and just brilliant stuff. Great bread. I mean, it's a food destination for me, and it's wholesome and comforting. And I think there's a bit of Americana in that. A weird way, I feel there's a bit of Americana in French food, and to a certain extent, French culture. I think that if you go to Napa and Sonoma here in Northern California, you'll see that we live that lifestyle, and we try to live it here. It's harder in Orange County because, well, we live in Plasticville, for one thing. But if you haven't seen the episode, maybe you missed it, maybe you stopped watching No Reservations, as I know many of you have, and for good reason sometimes, I suggest you try to catch it. Experience one of the greater sidekicks that Bourdain has ever had on his show. Ludo's charming, he's funny, he's kind. He's not self-deprecating, he doesn't make fun of himself, but he's very funny in the way that he does certain things. But one of the greatest things, he visits his grandmother in her home, and maybe one of the single greatest moments I will remember of No Reservations, is I just thought it was really gripping to watch Ludo cook for his grandmother and just feel so much pressure. But Ludo takes him all around Burgundy, to his grandmother's house, to his old hangouts, some of the restaurants where he worked, introduces him to chefs who made him who he is, hangs out with Ludo's high school friends. They drink a lot of wine. They eat a lot of cheese. But unlike episodes like Montreal, where he visits Martin Picard, no one's getting shit-faced. I like that. And I don't think you have to get jacked up all the time. It's funny, though. This wouldn't have been funny, though. So I pulled a few clips to kind of give you an idea of how the episode went and some of the highlights that I found particularly interesting. And listen, Ludo's French accent's thick, okay? But you get used to it. I have no problem understanding him when he talks. I think his English is fine. And I'm irritated. I get pissed off a little when they subtitle every single thing he says every time he's on television. But I also understand that not everybody can understand people who don't speak Queen's English. So, listen, I can't subtitle this audio, but you do your best, you English-speaking snobs, you know?
Burgundy, where Chef Ludo Lefebvre was born, raised, and grew up before emigrating to America, where he expected to find Pamela Anderson running on a beach in slow motion, and instead found himself on Top Chef Masters and Ludo Bites America.
That was an obvious Borat reference, and he's joking. Pamela Anderson. Ludo ended up with someone more beautiful, talented, loving, maybe one of the smartest people I've ever met, Chrissy. I couldn't imagine Ludo without Chrissy. I couldn't imagine Chrissy without him either. They're like peanut butter and jelly, or peas and carrots, Forrest. You've seen couples like this, right? They complete each other. Some people find it sickening. I think it's great to see. So the first place Ludo takes him is a truck stop, a routière, as he calls it. I think that's French for a restaurant. But this isn't like Millie's Diner in the middle of the desert where you're going to have burgers and coffee, you know, like we see here in America. They're serving French classics at this place, like coq au vin, beef bourguignon, lots of French cheese, big plates of cheese, runny cheese, fresh baguettes, tons of wine in the middle of the freaking day.
So these guys are basically having a little lunch and getting hammered on wine before getting back in the truck to deliver valuable goods and services. I love this country.
The one on the table, Tony, is the one that's very regular wine.
Like table wine.
Table wine.
Coq au vin, rooster in wine.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, this is a classic example of country cooking. I mean, you got a big, tough, nasty-ass rooster, too old to grill, too tough to roast. But it's got good flavor. So they marinate it for a couple of days in the local red. Basically simmer the out of it. Whole idea was to get it reasonably tender enough to eat.
I feel good here. I like it.
Yeah, you look very happy. It's nice. These are your people, dude.
I know.
Like roots. This is going to be a good business model for you. It's a good name for a restaurant, Routier.
Oh, Tony, give me some idea.
Don't blame me if it all goes wrong.
So next, Ludo takes Tony to his hometown where he grew up, Auxerre, and some interesting tidbits about Ludo's grandmother. This woman was a ball buster. She didn't lay down like a lot of the French did in World War II. She joined the resistance. She took no shit off of fucking Nazis. I love this woman. Did time for it, too.
Down the way, Ludo's hometown of Auxerre.
Point is, your grandma is an ex-convict.
She is, yeah, trust me, yeah. But during the war, you know, World War II, you know, she was waiting for the British to drop the arms, you know, the gun or whatever, to distribute the resistance. She was in jail for 4 months.
She was in jail at age 16.
Yes.
Most people in France chose to collaborate. Very, very few, like your grandma, risked torture and death.
So here's the house. So that it was a whole house where I lived with my parents. And after my parents separated, and my grandpa and my grandma buy the house. So that's where I grew up. My room was over there, on the top.
Gotta tell you a short story. One of my most embarrassing moments ever. We were invited to a birthday party last year for Ludo and Chrissy's twins. They were one. They were turning one. A big time, big birthday party. They'll never remember it, but you know, you always have to go to the first one. So Ludo's mother was visiting from France. Very nice woman, very friendly, very French. We're leaving, and everybody's hugging and saying goodbye. Now listen, I'm a gringo, Americano, okay? I'm half cultured in European tradition. I know some of it, not all of it. And I know that when you say hello or goodbye, you do the half kiss on the cheek on each side, and then the other side. On one side, then the other. So everyone's doing this with his mom. So it's time for me. I do the left half kiss on the cheek, then the right half kiss on the cheek, and then it goes south. She does this thing 3 times. I don't know. Maybe it's the French way. Maybe I'm just thick as shit. I don't know. It's actually 3 on the cheek and not 2. So I pull away after 2, and there's this awkward moment like I feel I just insulted her because I didn't continue the goodbye thing. Like I was in a hurry to get away, which I was not. So I don't know, a few seconds pass. I go back to finish the 3rd kiss on the cheek and nearly stick my tongue in Ludo's mother's ear. I think I turned 3 shades of purple. It was the most awkward thing I'd ever done. I didn't know what else to do, you know? I don't know how to say I'm sorry in French or excuse me, I'm an asshole, but I don't know any better. So I just looked straight ahead and left. And I'm sure she didn't notice. It was no big deal. But inside my head, you know me, I worry about everything. I couldn't help but think that she went back, told Ludo that this gawky American friend of his tried to tongue her in her ear. And I thought Ludo would come out and try to kick my ass in the street.
So here, there's a wine cellar. When I came here with my wife, you know, the first time, I remember she cried. She cannot take it anymore. My grandpa was coming at 10 o'clock in the morning and said, okay, Chablis, Chablis. My wife, she was saying, guys, French people, and she looked at me and said, you just drink and eat, guys. What's wrong with you? It's a different style of life, you know?
So what comes next? What else? Ludo's grandmother takes out her notebook full of her favorite recipes and cooks them for them. Jambon chablisane, ham covered in a cream sauce made of butter, cream, shallots, chablis, and tomatoes, baked in the oven for 45 minutes. If watching Ludo's grandmother cook a comfort meal for him in the house he grew up in, if that doesn't give you goosebumps, check your pulse. You may not have a heart.
Recipe book?
Yeah, mama.
That's pure gold.
Yeah, right, yeah, you know. Cassoulet, or pot-au-feu, I like pot-au-feu. So that's a recipe, jambon la bourguignonne. People don't know too much about that. But where I'm from here in Chablis, which Chablis is the north of Burgundy, we're all known for white wine. So we do this ham with cream and white wine. A touch of butter. Shallot. You sweat. You know, deglaze with white wine. Little bit vinegar. And cream.
Un peu de tomate.
Yeah. Cook it again for 45 minutes. Very simple dish to do.
Jambon chablisien.
I should bring this recipe back with me in LA, actually.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know about this dish.
Then his grandmother pulls out her grandmother's cookbook. Now we're talking generations ago, and Ludo cooks right from that cookbook. Eggs Moret. Poached eggs in a red wine sauce. And he says at the end that he can cook for anyone here in L.A., anyone in the world. But when he cooks for his grandmother, that's when he feels the most pressure.
You know, butter, onions, bacon.
It's like a red wine sauce.
Yeah.
What's the thickening in?
Flour. So normally, you know, you poach your eggs in the sauce. I love to poach them on the side because if you poach in the sauce, they become so red.
I've never had this dish.
The eggs might?
Yeah.
Classic is good sometimes. We forget our classic too much. You know? Yeah.
Beautiful.
Okay, enjoy the oeuf morette. Classic.
So when would you eat this dish?
I mean, normally this dish is more like for Easter.
Easter.
Oui. You know what, Tony? I can cook for everybody in LA or in my restaurant, but cook for mommy is pressure.
After the eggs, jambon chablisien.
C'est bon.
Yeah. C'est bon. Right. For me, it's a memory as a child, you know? Very simple. Mm. You know, very simple.
It's delicious.
So one last clip, then I'll finish this up. This kind of spoke to me a lot. And I've talked a lot about it lately here, and when I'm here anyway. His grandmother pulls out all these cheeses. And I mean a lot of cheeses. Runny French cheeses, the good stuff. About 3 wheels worth. And Tony says something that has to give you pause and makes you think about life balance when it comes to being a gourmand, or foodie, as we call ourselves.
The font of all wisdom is oozing out of that plate. I would stick a blunt knife in your neck for this cheese.
It's perfect for my cholesterol. It's great.
I'm on Lipitor already.
I don't know.
Are you on Lipitor?
Yeah.
My doctor said, okay, this is the situation. You can change your life or take Lipitor. I said, well, what is required to change my life? Well, no more cheese. J'ai commencé à pleurer. The fact is, this is a shining example to the world why France is a great country.
Ludo says this is not good for my cholesterol, and Tony asks him if he's on Lipitor, which is a drug that doctors put you on if you've got high cholesterol, and you don't want to or can't change your lifestyle to bring it back down. And Ludo says, yeah, he's on it. And Tony has many times in the past admitted that he's taking Lipitor. He said in French, and that's what he was saying in French, that when the doctor told him that he had to stop eating these cheeses, he said he started to cry. Really, he cried in front of the doctor, then went on Lipitor. That's dedication to cheese right there. I'll take Lipitor so I can eat cheese. Balance. You can eat this way sometimes, not all the time, but you must exercise. You must balance your diet with things that are not rich in fat. And listen, there are some things I refuse to give up. I refuse to take drugs to lower my cholesterol, so I exercise as often and as much as I can. That's the only way I'm going to continue to live the life I want to live, but in a healthy way, because that's how I want to live it. And I love my life. as a foodie. I do. And I'm not giving it up for anything. I mean, I love living this life, the food that we eat, the things that we drink. So if I've got to take some pain to go along with it, I'll do it. No Reservations, the final tour, Mondays on Travel Channel. And after that is over, we'll have one final season of The Layover. And then Tony goes off into the sunset, CNN. And finally, I'd like to talk a little bit about Ludo's new book, Ludo Bites, which is available this Tuesday from bookstores around the country. Who the hell am I kidding? Available from Amazon.com. Like, anyone is still buying from brick-and-mortar stores anymore. I went to Barnes & Noble last month. Tyler Hamilton is this professional cyclist, rode with a U.S. Postal Team, Lance Armstrong, where he won his seven Tour de France titles. He just released a book about his life as a professional cyclist and doper, admitted doper, and he outed Lance Armstrong and a lot of his teammates and coaches. And it was a riveting story. I wanted to read it, and I thought I might find the book at a brick-and-mortar store. Maybe on sale, because it was a new release. Yeah, no fucking way. This thing was full price. And if you want a discount at a store like this, you've got to pay them like $25 to become a member, and then you get discounts on books. I mean, seriously? I don't pay Amazon shit. I get books cheaper than that. And free shipping if I order more than $25, which I always do. Anyway, I'm not instant gratification, man. I ordered from Amazon. I wasn't in that big of a hurry for this one. So anyway, Ludo's book is full of stories from his individual pop-ups, including the list of staff from each Ludo Bites, which is funny, recipes, photos, behind-the-scenes factoids about, you know, what's going on in Ludo's head when he composes these dishes, why he made it the way he did. If you want to know what goes through the head of a chef like Ludo to get to these final dishes, the book is really good about giving you an idea. So I'm going to give you an idea of some of the recipes that are available in the book. Here's a short list. Bread soup with Gruyere marshmallows. Foie gras beignets, apricot saffron chutney. Striped bass, yuzu aioli, garden vegetables. Veal, udon, enoki mushrooms, sesame seed miso. Scallops, almond puree, pickled grapes, capers, curry oil, and cauliflower ice cream. Cabbage wrapped foie gras, kimchi consomme. Bavette, escargot, red wine, butter, shallot, jam, roasted eggplant, carrot slaw. Cheese cupcake, chicken liver chantilly, kumquat and cornichons, poached egg, potato mousseline, chorizo condiment, Mexican-style corn, tomatillo, green onion oil, brown butter powder, confit pork belly, matcha green tea cake, red berries with a mascarpone mousse, smoked butter and a sardine laughing cow cheese, sardine and cheese. Can you imagine? Cod, smoked potato, pickled bell pepper, pil-pil sauce, and amaranth. Tons of good stuff in here. And as I said, we missed the very first Ludo Bites, but we caught the second one, right on the heels of his first stint on Top Chef Masters. And I recapped this first experience back in episode 43, in the late summer of 2009, I think. And we had veal tartare, which at the time I said was challenging. Veal's a young calf, okay? A lot of people have a hard time eating young calf. I do not. I find it delicious. Anytime I get the chance, I'll have it. But the meat of a young calf served raw, that's getting a little close to the bone. The dish was excellent, and I admired Ludo's guts to serve something like this. And he, at the time, I think I talked about it on the show and said, well, I was really challenged by this. And I remember Chrissy telling me that they were listening to the show together, and which I found awesome. And he turns to her and he says, what the fuck is this guy talking about? He doesn't know what he's talking about. And she goes, no, listen, listen. And he had a hard time understanding that I was challenged. I didn't say that I thought he was crazy. I just said it was a bit challenging for me, which I liked. You know, how often you get challenged by food. But this served as a warning shot for what would come a couple years later when these anti-foie gras protesters lined up outside of one of his pop-ups and he sticks his head out the window, basically tells them all go suck his dick, right? That he loves foie, that he'll eat it all day, all night, that he'll rub it on his skin just to spite them. But the dish that stood out, and I was so happy to see a recipe for in this book, was a chorizo soup with melon and cornichon sorbet. Spanish chorizo, one of my favorite tastes, period. But in a soup, who thinks like this, right? Melon and smoky cured meats, dry cured meats like prosciutto, ham, go really well together. So again, this makes a lot of sense. And the cornichon sorbet is completely French. If you're not familiar with cornichons, they're very tiny pickled gherkin cucumbers. And I mean tiny, like 3 inches long maximum. They're traditionally served alongside a plate of charcuterie or cheese, like you would with olives. So with respect to Ludo, here's the recipe from the book for this soup. And I won't be providing this one on my website, okay? So if you really want this, buy the book. It's available from Amazon directly on the site. Trust me, it's worth every single penny. You see the number of incredible dishes he's provided recipes for here. It's worth it. Ludo says, I've never understood why anyone would order a plate of charcuterie at a restaurant. All those cured meats are good, sure. But unless the chef is making them himself, you may as well just go to the store and buy them. You want something from the mind of the chef. That's what I was thinking when I developed this dish. A playful reinterpretation of those plates of copa, jamón abarico, or salsa sansé. Spanish chorizo becomes a chilled, creamy soup. The classic cornichon accompaniment becomes a sorbet, and cubes of summer melon provide texture and sweetness. It may sound odd, but trust me, to taste it is to love it. Jonathan Gold named it a top 10 dish for 2009. He said, a cool, cream-flavored, funky, smoky Spanish chorizo, bathing cubes of juicy, ripe melon and splinters of ice. Ice that expressed the essence of cornichons and pickled onions, with a texture as jagged as its taste. A soup that is well worth the wait. To make the soup, you'll need 1.5 pounds of hot Spanish chorizo. Remove the casing, slice the meat very thin. 3 1/4 cups of half and half, half cup of heavy cream, and some freshly ground white pepper. For the cornichon sorbet, you'll need 1 cup of drained cornichons, 1 cup of sliced yellow onions, 1 cup of simple syrup, which is basically equal parts sugar and water, and 2 tablespoons of water, preferably flat mineral water. For the garnish, 3/4 cup of 1/4-inch diced cantaloupe, 3/4 cup of 1/4-inch diced honeydew melon. To make the soup, combine the chorizo, half and half, and heavy cream in a large, heavy saucepan. Bring to a near simmer over medium heat. Reduce the heat to low. Cover it. Simmer it gently for 30 minutes. Do not allow the soup to boil. This is important anytime you're cooking milk, like making ice cream or anything else. Milk will scorch, so be careful. Strain the soup into a high-powered blender, discard the chorizo, blend the soup until smooth and creamy. Season to taste with pepper, pour into a bowl, cover, and refrigerate until cold. The soup will thicken as it chills. Meanwhile, to make the sorbet, combine the cornichons and onions in a food processor and process until finely chopped. Transfer to a bowl, whisk in the sugar, syrup, and water, refrigerate until cold. About 20 minutes before serving, transfer the cornichon mixture to an ice cream machine and freeze according to the manufacturer's instructions. To serve, pour the cold soup into small bowls, top each with a quenelle of cornichon sorbet, and garnish with the diced melons. Serve immediately. I cannot tell you how great this is, how incredibly refreshing the flavors are, and a nice chilled soup. Gotta love that. And I gotta tell you, that's all I have for today. It was an all Ludo show. I said it was gonna be all Ludo all the time, and well, by God, it was. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Quicksilver, Paramount Pictures, Travel Channel for the audio. Music in this episode by Julian K. and Cascade. If you like the music, visit the website mylifeasafoodie.com. You can buy the songs for 99 cents. Don't forget to join our Facebook group, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the channel on YouTube, where Out to Lunch lives and breathes. Until next time, we celebrate our 100th episode, hopefully with Don at the helm here. My name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. Ciao. It's time you see. Love you again.